Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. It's the 28th of March, 2013 for me here in the land of the rising sun. And today we are talking to our old friend Charlie McGrath of WideAwakeNews.com. I hope people have tuned into him before, but it is the first time we've had you here on the program, although not the first time that we've spoken. So it's good to finally get you here on the Corbett Report. Charlie, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be here, and it's a real honor and a pleasure to join you here. And as you mentioned, we've talked together. You've been on my program, and we've done some collaboration on other work. And I think our views are pretty similar. And you're enlightening me to some new things, especially as far as currency and that kind of thing. So I think it's been a mutual relationship, and I'm glad to be here. As a long thank you for having me.
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, I think this is a collaborative learning process for all of us, and it's always great to be able to connect with like-minded people to start spreading and kicking around some of the ideas. But before we get into today's conversation proper, since you are, I suppose, new to the Corbett Report, why don't you introduce yourself to my listeners and just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, you bet. Charlie McGrath, that's my name. My website is WideAwakeNews.com. My YouTube channel is Krabby Dog Tricks, which is a whole different story. A lot of people initially know me from there, started following me on the YouTube channel, and I created the website and the radio program, which airs nightly, 5 o'clock West Coast U.S. time, 8 o'clock East Coast on the Rinse Radio Network. My background is I am from Red State America. I've been in the building material industry for over 20 years. I've done everything from, you know, the lowest job to the highest jobs of management in that industry. But in 2008, 2007, watching a nation's housing market collapse and buckle, and then realizing that, you know, the institutions that helped facilitate that needed to only ask for a blank check on a post-it note, and our financial future was levied in order to pay off these institutions, caused me to take on more of an activist role. And, you know, 4 years later, here I am.
Well, okay, let's hone in on tonight's subject then, because I want to talk about something that I know that you talk about and that I've talked about here before, and I think is such an important groundwork subject that we need to lay in order to even be able to put across any of the types of information that we often talk about, whether it be the economic collapse or the political shenanigans or any of that. I think the one thing that we have to do before we can even broach such a conversation with people is break down their pre-existing preconceptions and ideological barriers to encountering new information. And that's easier said than done, but
and ours, you know,
if, and if ours, absolutely. Well, yeah. I think it's part of the process that we have to come to an understanding that we do have those types of ideological barriers and preconceptions, and we have to address them in some way. But let's focus in on the left-right political issue, which still obviously holds the vast majority of the population in its sway and in its thrall. First, why don't you just tell us a little bit about how you see that situation, and then we'll get into some of the specifics about what we can do about it.
Well, I see it as a damning mechanism that is enslaving humanity. I mean, I see it as you and I were talking before that we started the program, probably, in my opinion, the most important thing that I can do, the most important issue facing us, is the separation in our country. And it isn't just the United States, obviously, it's globally, but the ability to divide and conquer is a time-honored tactic in militaries have used, and it works just as well in a political, social, economic, theological landscape. I mean, and you know, doing this for now 4 years, seeing how polarized people are and how they're, you know, indoctrinated into one camp or another, it is how all corruption can grab a foothold and maintain course, is the fact that we fight amongst ourselves rather than look at the people or corporations that brought us here.
Well, tell us about your own perspective, how you came to this perspective, because I imagine you, like myself, started out in that left-right political matrix.
Absolutely.
So how did you break out of that mindset? Well,
that's what I said at the beginning, Red State America. You know, I've been in the business world for 20 years, so naturally, I'm supposed to be I'm white, I live in Montana, I'm supposed to be a Republican. And I'm not only supposed to be a Republican, I'm supposed to be a good neocon. I want to see Wall Street succeed, I want to see everything done. It is because this is where I grew up, this is what I've been indoctrinated in. What I've seen over the last several years is that when you break down, when you talk to people, you open your own mind and you realize that, you know what, you are being sold a system, you're being sold an agenda that sounds good, that your buddies are all, glomming onto because they've been sold the same bill of goods. But when you really focus at the people who are doing the selling, this slick salesperson, be it the head of a union or the head of a government or the head of whatever, you realize that what they pay lip service to and what they actually do are always two different things. Because everybody, Democrat, Republican, blue or red, they promise to help the people. Regardless if it's, talking to neocons or dyed-in-the-wool bleeding hearts, they promise to help the people. But when the cameras are off, when the doors are closed, that's exactly what they do not do. They do what seems to be what is diametrically opposed to what they just said they were going to do. And what I found over the last several years is when you actually go into a conversation with somebody that you don't have all the answers, but really listen to what they're saying, once you uncover their political or ideological bias and realize what they're saying at their core, we all have the same beliefs. We all want to be left alone. We talked a little bit prior about natural law. When you really talk to somebody and take your bias, put it to the side, and overlook or shield yourself from their bias, or don't let it affect you, mentally affect you or tick you off, you realize that at the end of the day, most people want the same thing. Most people want to be left alone and be productive and be, try to achieve happiness. But they're lured into one camp or another.
And most people want to help other people. They don't want to see their neighbors or friends starving to death on the streets. And that's another point of leverage that's used against us, because people have different ways of arriving at that goal. So those different paths are then split into different sections of humanity, and they're pitted one against another. Well, we could outline that system till we're blue in the face, but I imagine most of my listeners are already pretty familiar with how that works in their own political contexts. What I'm interested in is that perhaps I'm biased at this, maybe there's a little bit of echo chamber going on because of the circles that I move in, but I truly do see this starting to break down and starting to fail, at least at certain key points. And when we look at, for example, the outrageous abuses of the Obama administration, there are at least some chinks in that armor of the two-party system, and more people, to my mind, seem willing to question this than at any time in recent history. And that's, again, perhaps that's just my perception. Do you see that similar thing playing out in your...
Yeah, and I think it's inevitable. I mean, you can lie to everybody, right, all the time. And there's going to be most people, as long as their status quo is somewhat stable, most people are going to just plug into the pop culture and run with it. They're not going to care, and they're going to believe in their leadership or their idols or whatever they're believing in. They're going to keep with that value system, belief system. But when it starts to go awry, it's a sledgehammer of reality, is what I refer to. You don't have to believe in anything that you say on your report or I say on my program. You could think we're conspiratorial wackos, and you might. You might right up until the day that this reality sledgehammer comes up pounding on your door, and more people are falling into that category. In the United States alone, right, since 2009, we've nearly doubled our sovereign debt. We've added 30 million people to food stamp rolls. We've, have a true unemployment rate north of 20%. So there's real affected individuals out there that are obviously not counted, not put in statistics and fed to the public as fact, but that pool of people that are affected is growing. And I think the fastest way to unplug somebody out of their reality is to plunge them into what these poor and forgotten individuals are going through. If you want to plug somebody out of the notion of neocon, or unplug them from liberalism, Take them out of their comfort zone and show them what happens, and show them what's happening with either political party. And all of a sudden, their ideology suddenly takes a back seat. And I think we're seeing more and more of that.
It presents an interesting contrast because there is obviously a disconnect between political ideologies, kind of capital I in an idealized sense, versus the political parties. And people will often sell out their political ideologies for the sake of the party because it's almost like that winning team scenario.
Right.
Obviously, I think this is part of a controlled, self-calculatedly devised plan. I mean, I don't think that this just happened contingently as just kind of willy-nilly. How did you see this developing historically? Do you think that there was some sort of direction to this, or was this just simply the way that representative democracies evolve?
You mean the grabbing of many ideas and putting them under smaller or bigger and bigger tents to where you end up with just a two-party system, and then people willing to give up their belief system or alter it is so they can fit into the right column, you know, fit into the right Republican or Democrat. That's a big question. I just clarified your question. First of all, I heard a beep in the background, and I want to make sure that's not a Fukushima detector going off over
there. It was just my laundry. But,
okay, good.
I'll let you know if there's any major disaster here.
If you flee, I understand. Or you start suddenly put on a Tyvek suit, I'll know why. You know what? I think first of all, we have to be very narrow-minded to think that we only have the ability to have a few political systems or political parties or groups or an ideology to cling to. You said, you talked about when you break down most people and you get to their core beliefs, they're pretty similar. They want to help people. I think that there's people of every stripe, of every color, of every thought process, and to be able to whittle them into, or to corral them rather, into a two-party system, because that's really what is before us. And in reality, it's only a one-party system. But I think that has been a tactic that has been, you know, I don't know how far back in history in the United States we could say that this has been developing, but certainly over the last several decades. It has been played. This move has been played to a perfect T, to where that is it. We have a made-for-TV drama, either Democrat or Republican. You either in one camp or another. Oh, don't waste your vote by voting Libertarian or whatever ism. You got to get in lockstep with one of these parties. I think the overt pressure to be in one of those camps is something new. Within the last century.
You raised the prospect earlier that one of the quickest ways to get people unplugged from this party system is to expose them to the cold hard realities of some of these sledgehammer of reality, or whatever we want to term it, of some of the things that are happening. For example, the recent events in Cyprus or whatever, which seem to be those types of shock events that shock people out of their complacency. That, to my mind, paints a somewhat bleak picture, in that it suggests that the only way people can really start to internalize this information is when it starts to affect them personally. Is there a way to reach out to people directly before that happens? Is there a more effective or less effective way of doing that? I mean, I'm not looking for the magic key, but is there something we can be doing?
I think you're doing it. You know, I think I don't know what you do every day when you talk to people in Japan or friends and family back in Canada, but I'm assuming you don't use a sledgehammer or a bucket to just shock people into reality. I still go to work every day and work in a community that is dominated by neocons. And I just point out the obvious reality that cannot be disputed, right? If you thought we were going to have an end to war, under Obama, you know, we've increased it. If you thought suspending free market capitalism in order to save it was going to bring us back to some kind of system that they call free market capitalism, well, look where we're really at. I mean, these massive profits for banks. And, you know, if you're in the business world, you realize things have not returned to glory days. So, I think by pointing out pieces of reality, letting some people, obviously, they can't handle it, man. They'll follow a channel like yours or mine, and then they'll get on the internet and start reading about FEMA camps and drones and chemtrails and stuff like that. And then they're gone. They're out. They just want to plug back in to the Matrix to have their beer, watch Gladiator games, and drive on. And that's just, some people are different than others. I found with people that are easily scared, it's better to show them slowly, show them with things that can't be disputed or that don't have a stigma of a conspiratorial tinge to it. However, I've been saying over the last, first of all, I apologize for my voice. I'm running a bit hoarse here. I've been saying over the last year that, I've been saying for 4 years that the pounding somebody with reality is the fastest way to end a friendship, to end a marriage, to end, you know, to break up a family. And I've literally had people call the program and say, hey, my wife left me because I showed her all this stuff about FEMA camps. I'm like, well, you should have done that. I mean, that, you know, you're scaling the hell out of people that way. Over the last year, I've been saying, I don't know how much longer the slow way of bringing people into reality is going to be effective, mainly because there's going to come a point where there's no more time. You can't spend a year waking your brother up so he'll, you know, do things to prepare for in a very uncertain future when it hits the fan on the next following Monday morning. So if you see those events coming, these ripple events that could lead to collapse, you got to make a decision. You know, do you take care of yourself and your immediate family, and you bring them up to speed with what you believe to be the truth and what you believe to be reality? Or do you just prepare for them because you love them and you care about them? And, you know, we talked about Cyprus a little bit. That certainly could be a trigger event. I've been saying over the last few days on the program, it not only could be just a trigger, it could be the trigger that leads to global collapse by tomorrow morning. And I know that sounds crazy, but it's not. I mean, the banks open here in about 3 hours. If I woke up tomorrow to find out that JP Morgan and all these corporations that are exposed to this massive derivative, debt derivatives, went under, we'd be in global collapse tomorrow morning. I know that's kind of getting off the topic, but it, you know, I do believe that if you try to use a sledgehammer to wake somebody up, you're going to build an enemy. If you do it in a way that you care about this person, then you're more likely to affect a change of thought process. And once that takes hold, it's game over. Once they start to, you know, they realize on their own that they're being fed a bunch of propaganda from the mainstream media and that political interests serve special interests and not the people. Once they're locked onto that, everything changes. They stop watching so much mainstream media. They stop believing every lie that comes across from a politician. And then, you know, it's a self-awakening.
Well, I certainly agree with your assessment there, especially that whatever we do to pass this information on to others has to be done from a fundamental position of caring about right. those people and wanting to help them. If it's simply done as a means for arguing with people or a means to start some sort of debate, it's not coming from that place and it's not sincere in that way. So I think that can definitely tinge or color the conversation in ways
absolutely.
That we want it to happen. What do you say to people who say, well, this is just human nature? People just naturally divide into groups and they will start to associate with the group. There's nothing that you can do about it. So it might as well at least be about these big ideas and we might as well congregate into these political parties so that we can get more of the population at least thinking about these issues than otherwise would.
Well, then you're going to lose and you're going to be hurt by that party because there isn't a party that that is the lesser of two evils. That would be my answer. They're both exactly the same. And that is a fundamental idea that, you know, is key to also waking people up, I believe, is getting them to understand and believe the truth that they are the same. You know, that there is no difference coming your way, regardless if it's Barack Obama or George W. Bush. The outcome is going to be exactly the same. You might get promised something and you might, you might feel like something's being done on your behalf, but it isn't. So if somebody was saying, well, that's the way human nature is, well, I'm going to say, okay, well, survival of the fittest. Why don't I club you over the head and take what you have? You know, I mean, if you want to believe that this is the way it's always going to be and you're going to go to jump to the left or the right to think you have a voice, then you're not only going to be sorry, you're very, very naive.
Well, I couldn't agree more with that. I think that's spot on. And I agree that the lesser of two evils, even if it did exist, would still be evil. And I'm not going to choose between them. But so let's Let's spend a minute here. If you had 2 minutes to address someone out there who still identifies with that left-right system, what would you say to them specifically on this issue to try to get them to question what they've hitherto believed?
I would probably give them my personal experience because I can speak at depth and with an expert perspective on what I've lived. And it would be, look, I'm here to tell you that I understand the dynamic of divide and conquer. I was brought up in a red state Republican environment. I was served in our military. I was in the first Gulf War. I've done the patriotic thing. I've done the hoorah. I've done the it's all American exceptionalism. And I bashed the other side, which would be the left side, the nanny state, the bleeding hearts. And my experience goes back to marching in the streets during George W. Bush's presidency when he gave out $600 as the first stimulus, and then watching that movement be turned into something that was perverse and corrupt by people such as Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck, and now pigeonholed. Look where it's at. It started out as individuals protesting the expansion of government, of military domination on this planet, wars without just cause, and illegal wars, and the stealing of our financial future. That's how the Tea Party started out, and it got perversed and turned into the nutty far right wing of the Republican Party. And I would also say that the Occupy Wall Street movement, which has now been perversed and put into the far wacky wing of the Democratic or the liberal movement, started out as a result of the effects of corrupt government. The Tea Party saw what was coming. The Occupy movement is living what has now arrived. And these two people, if you talk to them as I have, you will realize that they're protesting against the same exact thing. What makes them hate one another is political or ideological dogma that has to be shed before we can do anything for ourselves.
That is such an astute point because, again, I just don't think I've seen that analysis anywhere in the mainstream. Not surprisingly, I suppose, but I haven't seen that reflected in a lot of the rhetoric from these people either. That, to me, the Occupy and Tea Party, the movements, the people in those movements, the real people, are two sides of the same coin. And they may see it from a different perspective, but they are seeing the same thing and they are fighting against ultimately the same thing, whether they realize it or not. So the ability to keep those people so bitterly opposed to each other is almost, I mean, it's almost something to marvel at, the way that humans can be manipulated. So
absolutely. And not only is it something that we can marvel at, but it's something that is fundamental for the control of the populace of this country and the world. I don't care where I'm going to China in a few days, wherever we go, we're going to see people being people. And, government wants to control that people. I don't care what ism you put behind it or what kind of graphics you run across your Fox News channel. It's all about control. And you have to make people believe that they don't have the same values as somebody else, or somebody else is trying to steal their values or corrupt them in some way. But the reality of it is, as we spoke the other night, when you boil it all down, man, we're all human beings and we all have this natural law right, regardless if you believe it comes from, the planet or the universe or God. We all want to have the ability to pursue happiness, and we deserve, this is our right. Everything else is somebody else has added onto it. Somebody else has put a layer on there. We need to break through that layer.
Well said. All right. Well, finally, there was one other point that I wanted to make that has just slipped my mind as you were wrapping up there.
there was one I wanted to make too. and now I've lost it completely. It was a left-right paradigm. My parting thought would be, I'm not kidding when I say that I don't know if the soft approach, the caring approach, I think it's very important. We all do this because we care. I don't know how much longer that is going to be effective. So if your strategy is the slow drip of reality, you might want to start thinking about taking actions to prepare for the people you care about, because I'm completely convinced that when global financial collapse occurs, could happen from Japan and their overwhelming debt load, could happen of what's happening in Cyprus, it's going to feel and look a lot like this crisis we see in Cyprus. Banks are going to shut down. People are going to get pissed. They're going to reopen. And we'll see tomorrow if it's either going to be, you know, they sold this notion to the people that everything's going to be okay, or if it's going to be blood in the streets.
I did remember my final question, actually.
Yeah,
that brings it right back to what going to say, because what do you think of the idea that we have reached a tipping point, that there is the 100th monkey effect or whatever it is, that we've reached this point in the development of the internet and all of these alternative media platforms, that we have reached some sort of turning point where people will start falling out of this faster than they have before? Is there something to that? Do you think this is happening?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think look, the march to tyranny isn't a static progression. It isn't moving at the same velocity. It's increasing. And with that march to tyranny also is increasing the velocity of awakening. And it is a lot of, technology is a big part of that. People being slapped upside the head with reality is also is a big part of that. And as these two things collide, what do we see? We see our governments around the world, at least in the so-called free world, stockpiling ammunition, moving to expand the use of technology to control its people, moving to expand the security industrial complex. So absolutely, I see a tipping point or a time coming where we're going to have more people awake than asleep, and then there's going to be a fight. if we were scripting a movie, this is how it would go.
All right, well, let's hope that we can script it in a way that it ends more positively than that, and we'll both have to continue working on that, I suppose, but we'll both be doing what we can. So once again, I hope people will be checking out your work. Once again, wideawakenews.com. Tell them again about your radio program.
The radio program is Monday through Friday, 2 hours a night, 5 o'clock west, 8 o'clock east on the Rinse Radio Network, and we cover generally economic and political and geopolitical events. And the YouTube channel is Krabby Dog Tricks. I do put out two or three commentary videos a week that are pretty popular. So you can subscribe to those there, or you can get it all through wideawakenews.com. I will say this, James. I think it's inevitable. I think a crisis of some sort is inevitable. It could be one that's horrific, you know, the worst humanity's ever seen. It could be one just a depression style change of light or way of our standard of living here in the U.S. But not I don't think the time – I think – let me restate that. The time to turn the ship around and go back to a form of representative government or less collusion between special interest and government, that's gone. This is my opinion, of course. So I believe there is an event coming, and it is incumbent upon us that are awake to do everything we possibly can to lessen the effect of that. And if that's waking people up, that's what we need to do. But I commend you for what you do over there. And I think it's important that we keep this message going, because I believe this crisis of reality is going to hit.
Well, I think everyone who's listening to this, listening to our voices right now and understands what we're talking about knows how serious this is. And I think it truly is. I mean, we shouldn't dismiss how important it is to get other people on board and aware of this information, because truly, when whatever happens, if there isn't a community of people there who understand what's happening, then we are lost. So this is one of the most important things that I think anyone can be doing. So once again, my hat's off to you for the work that you're doing, Charlie. I hope we're going to have you on the program many times to come in the future. So thanks again for your time.
Thank you, James.